Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
The First Lady of New York Radio, Joan Hamburg, entertaining and informative. Talk Radio 77 WABC.
Welcome, one and all, to the Joan Hamburg Show. I have not talked to Christopher Anderson in a while, and he has written a brand new book called, and he's a best-selling author. This book is called The King, The Life of Charles III. And it's a portrait of someone that we think we know, but we really didn't know him. Charles, who finally, as an older man, is going to be the king. I mean, how many years? And Chris Anderson, who has written at least 18 bestsellers, selling all over the world, two of his books. The Day John Died, that's about JFK Jr., and The Day Diana Died were number one for a long time. And Chris Anderson was the contributing editor of Time, the senior editor of People. He's done amazing things. And The Life of Charles was a real read. I mean, I picked it up and I couldn't put it down. We think we know everything, but we knew nothing. And it was a fascinating look, too, at the monarchy and about all the characters in it, about Lady Diana as well, Camilla, Parker, all of it. So I'm curious, and welcome to you, Chris. What made you?
Oh, great to be back.
I know, it's been a while, but
you are one of my favorite people, you know that.
Well, we've had a good time over the years.
We have, absolutely.
So what happened that made you decide to take a look behind the curtain at King Charles?
Well, let me tell you, this book was quite the saga. You know, my last book was Brothers and Wives, which is about William and Harry and the rift between them, but and Kate and Meghan, of course. But I wrote The King over a five-year period, and then, of course, knowing that at some point he would become king. And if you like a little personal thing, I woke up every morning for the last year or 2 years thinking, oh my gosh, my wife's going to come in and say, well, the queen has either abdicated or passed away, so you're going to have to really, finish up this book. But what happened was she looked perfectly good when she met Liz Truss, the then prime minister, and I thought, well, I can take get on a ship and go to the Baltic and do this thing I've wanted to. So I got on a ship. The minute we got on the ship, the queen passed away.
Unreal, right?
Yeah. So I was literally at sea doing press and interviews and things like that about the queen's passing. But look, you're right. Charles has been waiting for 70 years for this job, and all that time he was right next to the queen. But he was in the spotlight like she was, but we never really got to know him. And I think people would be fascinated to learn what I discovered about everything from his huge temper and the tantrums he's thrown and to, of course, all the women in his life and all the obstacles, his childhood, heartbreaking, really.
No, it is. And the fact, too, that what he wanted, he got. And if he didn't, he went a little berserk. But that's the way, right? He was brought up. You want it, it's yours.
Exactly. And he was, and again, when I talked just a little tidbit here about his tantrums, I mean, one time his cufflink went down the sink, and he literally flew into a rage and tore the sink off the wall. Now, he did this twice in anger. He tried to strangle one of his valets. He tried to he chased one into who was so terrified into a closet. The guy locked himself in a closet to get away from the then prince. He hurled things at Diana and at other people in fits of anger because that's he's always been used to getting his way. But I do think it stems from having been this lonely child. You know, he was, you know, there's that point, you know, he always talked about how his mother was aloof and cold.
Right,
and
his father ignored him completely.
Right, his father, and when he did pay attention to him, his father was a bully. You know, he literally reduced Charles to tears in front of people routinely into his the teenage years. And so Charles, he was farmed out to horrible schools, one in particular, Gordonstown, where he was beaten and we'd call it, you know, abuse, child abuse today, what he underwent there from other students.
Wow. And yet, yeah. Do you think, and we'll jump ahead and then I'll go backwards a little bit, but mm-hmm. do you think that at this point that he has become or grown into being a real person, or did that, what we can call abuse, both at school and at home, where he, despite the fact he was royal, he was really belittled and threatened by everyone, classmates, right. the whole thing. Has he grown into being King Charles?
Well, I think there are moments. Yes, I do believe to some extent he has, and he certainly relies very heavily on Camilla. But, you know, there are these flashes of temper and impatience. For example, we saw it just recently when he took over, you know, there he is, first days as king. He has to sign some papers in Scotland. And you may recall the assistant that didn't move fast enough to clear the desk. And the prince had a little hissy fit there, you know. Now, when the eyes of the world are on you, you know, at this moment in history, and you can't control your temper to that extent, it does not bode well. So he did handle, by the way, the other day, having people pelt him with eggs in York when he was there with Camilla in the city of York in England. He managed to keep his cool when that happened, but I'm sure he flew into a rage later on behind closed doors.
And Camilla herself is a piece of work. I mean, that was a really interesting portrait of a woman who was a mistress and was proud of her relative being a mistress. And it, despite the fact that she knew what was going on and his marriage and his kids and everything else, she just soldiered on.
Right. And you know, it's interesting, you hit the nail on the head there with the reference to wanting to be a mistress. It was this, you know, her great-grandmother was Alice Keppel, who was the mistress to Edward VII. And even when Edward VII died, Queen Alexandra, who was very popular, summoned Alice Keppel to the king's bedside because that was the woman he really loved. And even the queen knew it. So even as a little girl, Camilla would talk about her great-grandmother, the king's mistress, and brag about it. Lynn Redgrave was at her school at the same time, and she told me some interesting stories, the actress. You know, it's she set out to be the mistress, the opening line, practically, to Charles when Camilla met him in 1971 was, you know, my great-grandmother and your great-great-grandfather were lovers, so how about it?
Right there.
And then later on, when she was actually, she had a brief time, even though she was an aristocrat, granddaughter of a baron, and didn't have to work. She did do a little stint working, and she had roommates, and the roommates were marrying lords and dukes and whatever. And they said, "Why aren't you marrying a lord?" And she said, "I'm holding out for a king,"
which she did. But it was also interesting that the children, the now grown-up children, who are probably so revered in England, also have their tempers and their little problems. And what do you think? I mean, everyone thinks of William as this dear, darling, you know, loving guy, but that kid's been through a lot, and he also manifested it in many ways.
Oh, yes. I do write about that too, and he does have a temper as well, and he has these dark moods He went through a lot of course, it didn't help when he became an air ambulance pilot, and then he got to see real tragedy up close, you know, taking, victims of traffic accidents and injured children to the hospital, that sort of thing. That plunged him more into sort of a depression. But I think the defining moment as far as both the boys are concerned, Harry and William, was when they walked behind their mother's coffin.
Yeah,
and
that was terrible.
It was terrible. They were forced to do this, and they didn't want to do it. And Charles really had a big role in forcing them to do it, as did Philip. And then now they kind of suffer from PTSD, you know. They say,
post-traumatic.
Harry has said, Harry says when he flies into London, it's a triggering experience because all he can think of is that day. And Charles, I think, feels guilty about it. Frankly.
I'm sure he does. But it's also amazing that Charles, with all his loneliness and all his rejection by his peers and even by his family, had a ton of women or lovers and just took what he wanted. It was like being let loose in a bakery.
Right. Well, he was, and that's pretty kind of controversial passages in the book, too, about how a friend of his, a polo player, would actually, a guy who was on his polo team, would actually go and kind of, get women for him and bring them back to this farmhouse. And Charles, who was getting over the fact that Camilla left him to marry Andrew Parker Bowles, was involved with a lot of women. In the end, it was two of his mistresses, Camilla and Lady Kanga Tryon, who actually picked out Diana to be his wife. You know, it was kind of a sick situation, but that's what they did. They did a list of 10 appropriate young women to be the mother of the future king, and Diana was always at the head of the list, so she was handpicked by Camilla.
Yeah. Do you think, now that you've finished, I'm talking to Christopher Anderson, the king, the life of Charles III, do you think he's happy with her? Sometimes, you know, be careful of what you wish for.
Well, with Camilla?
Yeah.
Yes, well, I think it's, you know, it's somebody, I love the line they said, the mistake Charles made was that he married his trophy wife first. nobody could figure out how he could possibly pick Camilla over the beautiful and
right
stunning,
and charming
Diana.
And caring, oh, Diana.
Everything, and I he's still in her shadow, isn't he? I mean, they both still are. That's the thing. But yeah, I do think they're peas in a pod. You know, that's what Camilla said once. She and Charles are that they just from the moment they met they clicked and. You can't get around that. Diana found she couldn't either. And I don't think she's clicked with the British people. That's the difference here. And I know that when Charles, promised not to make her queen, that was part of the deal to get convinced the queen to let him even marry Camilla. She's going to be princess consort. And, he reneged on that promise. I always said he would. I knew he would never stick to that because he would think it was insulting for his wife not to be queen, whoever she was. And that's another thing. People think it's a lesser title. Well, no, you can get rid of the consort because just like Elizabeth's mother during World War II was Queen Elizabeth, she later became the Queen Mother, but when you're married to the monarch, you're the queen. And that's what Camilla is.
Right. And nothing is going to take that away. She actually looks a lot better, but the public still hasn't taken her.
No. Well, the Queen, of course, endorsed her at one point, and earlier this year, after 17 years of Charles nagging her, I don't know if you remember the wedding of Charles and Camilla, but there was that astounding time when they had to get down on their knees in front of the Archbishop of Canterbury and beg forgiveness for their
sins,
manifold sins and wickedness, which I think is a great line, and really just, you know, prostrate themselves, and it was humiliating, but they were, and Charles was willing to do all of this if it meant, and promised that she'd never be queen, if it meant that he'd finally get to marry Camilla. I think it's one thing to say she's going to be queen, it's another thing to see it, because the coronation's May 6th, they will be in two thrones in Westminster Abbey, the consort's throne is 1 inch exactly 1 inch shorter than the sovereign throne, and they will place this magnificent crown on Camilla's head, and she will be trembling, I'm sure, but it's not going to sit well, I don't think,
right,
with the people, because, you know, 86% of the British people said as recently as 11 months ago that they did not, they would not accept her as their queen, so we'll see.
And you wonder how the boys really feel about it.
Oh, exactly. You know, they went out of their way to make Papa happy. You know, it was, William was the one who, as a teenager, you know, after a couple of years after his mother's death, actually went in and introduced himself to Camilla, you know, to try and break the ice, because he knew this was the woman his father loved and he wanted his father to be happy. But they don't want her to replace Diana.
Ever.
You know?
Right.
And in history, let's say, because, you know, from now on, it's going to be the Camilla show. And it's it just, I think they were blindsided by this. They believed their father would keep his word. And abruptly, you know, this decision was made just last February, so to make her queen.
Do you think that William has a happy life? You know, superficially, it looks lovely, perfect, you know,
sure.
Great kids, a charming wife, good in-laws. But it's hard to tell, because you more than most people know about the family and what goes on.
Lucky to have Kate Middleton, who is a kind of a steadying force. I think she's unfairly criticized as a kind of a, you know, first of all, everyone says she's way too thin.
Well, they're jealous, right.
I think they're jealous, right. I think that she's gorgeous and really in control of her life and does seem to have a sense of humor and is a happy person. She does not have the hatred of the press that William has. He blames them still for his mother's death, and it's just really
a
thorn in his side,
that.
Never gone away. So in that sense, I think he's always feels somewhat under the gun. And also, as you said, you know, these people are going to have to, the rest of their lives are predetermined, pretty much. Harry has pointed that out. They're trapped in a gilded cage, in essence, but it's one heck of a cage, and I think most people feel that. See them as pampered, you know.
Right.
Resented.
And a lot of people wonder if Harry didn't make a lot of mistakes. You know, he had a pretty good life as
right.
a prince, and now he's suddenly estranged from the family, and there's all kinds of gossip about the book that may or may not be.
Mm-hmm.
And he's got a lot of issues. He can't be a happy
right.
time for him.
No, it can't be. He's clearly, in my opinion, unhappy. I mean, he's trying to make, I think, you know, happy wife, happy life. But in his case, it's not to give up, you know,
what he had.
Yes. I mean, to have all that he had and give it up to be an influencer, you know, it just doesn't seem like it was, he got the best part of the bargain.
No.
And he is alienated. I mean, look what the royal family did. They embraced Meghan. They really did in a major way. I remember when the Queen went on that trip with her, with Meghan, they got on the royal train and they went up to northwest England, and there were wonderful pictures of the Queen just laughing her head off. She had a great time with Meghan. She liked Meghan a lot. And Charles walked her up the aisle when Meghan's father didn't show. You know, he befriended Meghan's mom, and I think there was real affection there, and all of a sudden, boom, you know.
Yeah, like what
all these
happened?
Accusations coming from Montecito.
But, you know, I know a lot of people who have worked with her and who know her very well, including college roommates. One of them was one of our interns a while ago, and not a bad word about her. They all thought she was great. Fun and loyal and lively. So it's interesting when you look at all this cast of characters. Will
it
Charles, and you think so too.
I do too. I totally see that. But I also, and I think she has by the time some of these comments got to her about race and whatnot, they did seem toxic and wrong and hurtful. And I think she was in a real pressure cooker.
Yeah.
By the same token, it would be nice to see everybody just put down their weapons for 2 minutes, so to speak, and see if they can't reach some sort of accommodation.
Right, and live their lives. Is Charles going to be a good king, in your opinion? This is all guessing, of course. There's no crystal ball.
Oh, well, you know, I think the first mistake people are making is to think he's going to be a placeholder king because of his age. Because first of all, you have the longevity of the Windsors. I mean, my God, he could very easily be on that throne for
years.
25 years. Yeah, many years. And he's 77. If he lives as long as his mother, he would be, you know, 20 years. He is going to be an activist king. I think he's going to do things to streamline the monarchy. I think he's going to kick some royals off the payroll. I think he's going to rattle some cages, though, in that process, and rub some people the wrong way, for another analogy. He's not supposed to interfere in politics, not supposed to have opinions, but he's loaded with opinions.
So what are you working on now? I know you
always...
Now, you
know I never say.
I know. But is it...
I don't want to tip people off too early, because sources then go running into the, you know, the woods.
Into hiding. I know,
right?
But we have royals left.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes, yes. Don't worry. I've got
There's a lot.
Sights on somebody.
Okay. Well, I'm excited for you and for us. It was really a good read.
Oh, great. Thank you.
Enjoyed it. And a fascinating look at this tortured guy who does seem a little bit happier now, but we'll see. Take care of yourself. I'm Joan Hamburg, and you've been listening to Christopher Anderson and his brand new book, The King, The Life of Charles III. I'm Joan Hamburg, and much more ahead on WABC.